Welcome back to another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, coming to you from Vikings Entertainment Network Studios at Winter Park. As the NFL's offseason rolls on, we're getting closer, folks, to the NFL draft. And so today on the Wobcast, we're going to talk about the offseason, some of the things the Vikings have done, some of the things the Vikings might do in the draft, and some things that people are saying about the Vikings. And to do that, I'm going to have producer Nate Vaughn here by my side, and we're going to walk you through it. So a jam-packed show today. We're going to go through my observations from the NFL owners' meetings last week right off the bat, but later on we're going to get to our interview with Ross Tucker, to some clips from the NFL Network, including the ideal scenario for the Vikings' first two picks. We'll run you through the latest edition of Mock Madness, which is up on Vikings.com right now, and then we're even going to get into Aaron Rodgers seeing a UFO. Interesting. Nate, do you believe in aliens?
I won't say no.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave that door open. Like, what's the harm in leaving that door open?
Well, there's no harm in it, I guess, and there's no harm in checking in with Aaron Rodgers on a non-football related topic to see what he has to say. You know, I just don't think many of our listeners are going to be interested in hearing what Aaron Rodgers has to say about football. But about aliens, it might be kind of interesting. So
everybody loves a good UFO story.
Yeah, and so we're going to hear one from Aaron Rodgers later in the show. But first, five observations, Nate, from the NFL owners' meetings in Boca Raton, Florida last week. Number one, the latest anti-kickoff return rule could have the reverse of its intended effect. Of course, as you know by now, on a one-year trial basis beginning in 2016, touchbacks that result from kickoffs will now result in the offense beginning at the 25-yard line instead of the 20. And obviously, we all know that the NFL has deemed the kickoff slash the kickoff return a dangerous play, and the league is working with the Players Association to make the game safer wherever it can. And a lot of times that's resulting in rules that may decrease the number of kickoff returns that we see. And that is probably what the intention of this rule is. But I'm suspicious, Nate, that this may actually result in more returns than in fewer returns.
Explain yourself, Wobby.
Because if you're kicking off and a touchback gives the receiving team the ball on the 25 instead of the 20, you're less motivated to have a kickoff that goes through the end zone and results in a touchback, right?
So you're saying sort of a pooch kick approach.
I think that that's something teams are going to consider. And so it'll be interesting to see. I happen to know how many kickoff returns there were in the league last year.
Do you count them all?
Yeah, I counted all of them. 1,098. All right. So I think if that number is drastically higher in 2016, they will not ratify this rule permanently next year at this time. Hmm. They will scrap it and try something different. If there are far fewer than 1098, which sounds like a tax form. I think that is a tax form, the 1098.
1099, yeah.
Maybe. Well, there are so many forms that no matter what number you name, it probably is a tax form.
Especially when you're in my tax bracket.
Yeah.
So many to keep track of.
Yep, good point. Anyway, so if there are fewer than 1098, I think that that rule will be ratified. But I'm suspicious that we're going to see an increase in kickoff returns, so it'll be interesting to see. In fact, the NFL itself acknowledged this possibility. Executive Vice President of Football Operations Troy Vincent said on NFL Network that league officials, competition committee members, coaches, and owners have spent a great deal of time debating whether the new touchback rule will increase or decrease the number of returns. It was debated, Vincent said, and discussed at length, and I think that's why it was a one-year playing proposal, is to see are the implications what we hope they will be with less returns. NFL VP of Officiating Dean Blandino agreed. He said, quote, "We put it in for 1 year so we can look at if there are any unintended consequences, and we won't get stuck with a rule." Blandino went on to say it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Now, Cordell responded on Twitter in comical fashion, saying rules are rules. I'm not mad. And then a series of emoticons. I don't know what that meant.
I don't know if a lot of people knew what they meant. There's like four different emoticons there.
Right. Yeah, I think he's got three different ones and two of each. So six total emoticons.
It looks like The first two are like angry.
Yes. Red faces.
And then the second two are like thinking.
Hand on the chin.
Yeah. And then.
Like a smirky smile.
Yeah.
Like
I don't really know what to call the third ones though.
I think he's suspicious too. Now, even though touchbacks go out to the 25 this year, Cordero catches one 7 yards deep in the end zone. You know what's happening?
Yeah. He's taking it
it's
out.
It's coming out. Yeah. He'll take his chances. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens. That's observation number one, that the latest anti-kickoff return rule could have the reverse of its intended effect.
Okay. Also, later in the Wobcast, we'll have a clip from the Rich Eisen show in which he talks about an idea that they have to maybe improve it, or maybe just a different way of approaching kickoffs and kick returns.
Well, I'll ramble on with my other observations, and then we'll get to that one. How about that? Okay, I'll be quicker. Okay, number two. Sportsmanship and player safety emphasized with the rule changes this year. Nate, you have the new ejection rule where if a player is guilty of two specific types of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, he will be ejected from the game. You have player safety emphasized with the outlawing of the chop block and with perhaps the touchback rule resulting in fewer kickoff returns. So with those three rules in particular, but with some others as well that were passed, sportsmanship and player safety being emphasized by the league. Number three, speaking of Cordero, opportunity is there and Cordero Patterson is looking to seize it. If you follow him on social media, you've noticed some inspirational types of posts of him, sayings that he's posted, and then he's working out a lot. He's showing that.
Besides the emoticons.
In addition to the emoticons, right. So I think we can all agree that he seems focused. And then you have Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer with some quotes kind of signifying that Cordero has an opportunity and that the team believes in him. Coach Zimmer said, quote, "We're hoping Cordero Patterson finally gets it on the right track. He's got to be more disciplined. He's got to be more specific in his routes, be more disciplined in where he lines up so that quarterbacks can trust him." And then Rick Spielman said, "I think he wants to prove to everybody that he wants to be a receiver. And this is the year that he's going to get that opportunity to do that. There's no question about his ability. And to me," Spielman said, "he's the best kickoff return specialist in the league right now. We just have to see if we can get it out of him at receiver." That was Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman. Those were quotes from those two guys speaking at the NFL owners meetings last week about Cordero. So interesting stuff there. Number four, staying on the topic of wide receiver. The Vikings may take a wide receiver in the draft, but not necessarily at 23. Why is that an observation? Well,
because each team gets 7 picks in a draft.
Right. So you don't have to take one with your first pick because you have, well, and actually we have 8 picks, by the way.
Well, there you go.
So, here's what Rick said. Quote, "We feel there's some candidates coming out in this year's draft in different points in the draft where we'll be able to address that being the wide receiver position, depending on what's on the board when we pick." That quote brought to you by the Board of Ambiguity.
Right.
Remaining ambiguous for as long as you can leading up to the draft. So wide receiver, it appears, is on the radar screen for the Vikings, but Rick doing anything but guaranteeing it will come at pick number 23. And finally, Spielman and Zimmer want Greenway back, but the process is ongoing. Spielman pointed out the team has signed 2 linebackers to compete at Greenway's spot during the owners' meetings, but he also said, "We're still in the process of hopefully getting Chad Greenway back." Zimmer, who said, "I think so," when asked if Greenway will be back, added, "We still have to work out the contract negotiations and all of those things, but I love Chad and his leadership and the way he is and what a competitor he is." So nice things said by Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer on Chad Greenway. Those guys obviously hoping that he comes back. All right. Let's go to the Rich Eisen show and an idea that Rich and one of his on-air producers have to save the kickoff. Here it is.
Some very interesting rules proposals that were passed by ownership, and that includes taking the kickoffs and making a touchback. No longer does a team have to go 80 yards after a touchback for a touchdown, or now you can go 75 to 25-yard line. Some of the most exciting plays in football are kickoff returns. That's where the Rich Eisen show will come in handy, because we have a solution.
Yeah, if the stance is we're going to move the kneeling of the football down to the 25-yard line and you're trying to prevent kickoffs, why not just eliminate the kickoff, but give the team – teams have challenges per game. They get two challenges. If you get one right, you get a third
three
challenge.
Play. Yes.
Why not give teams the option to say – you will be allowed to kick off two times during the game when you choose to do so. You can just kick off normally if you want, or you can use it as an onside kick. If you use both of your kickoff attempts and then you're down two possessions with 2 minutes to go,
you're out of luck.
You're out of luck.
Or how about this? And that we allow the kickoff to be instituted at the beginning of each half. But if I have two kickoffs in my back pocket, I can go ahead and use them whenever I wish.
So first quarter, you score a touchdown with 3 minutes to go. You could either just say ball starts at the 20-yard line.
25. Right.
Or you could say, you know what, we're going to kick off. They then don't know, are they onside kicking here to start off the game because they only get two of these, or
right.
are they going to kick it deep? Now, I also kind of thought, though, we're looking at the kick only from the perspective of the team kicking off.
Sure.
You could then also give that opportunity to the receiving team and saying, you also have two options during a game where you can say, no, we want you to kick off to us.
Uh-huh.
And that also allows their team, because if you have
well, then
an
if you,
asset.
Hold on a minute, hold on. I like that you're spitballing here.
Sure.
How about you say that you can kick off one time in a game and you can then also demand or you can use it either way. How about that? You get
that could work. That I like
I
that.
Think
we're
we now found it.
Life.
We're now spitball.
We
this is like our own Rich Eisen Show competition committee. So here's my proposal to you, the fans of this show. What if we say there are two special teams preemptories? I don't know. We'll come up with a better word. Where you have in a game a chance to say to the other team, we're kicking off. You must receive. That's where you use this as an onside kick opportunity. And there's also another time when I'm down and I got a guy in the back there, and I know that your kicker has a problem getting it in the end zone due to the wind is in their face.
Sure.
And I'm going to say, I'm Pete Carroll. There's Tyler Lockett. And you say, Tyler, I don't care how deep you are returning this thing. We need you to bust one because we're down X number of points. We're forcing you, San Francisco, to kick
wind.
Off.
There's right. a strong wind.
Right. You and know? That's it. Those are your two. You can use them to force the other team to kick off to you twice, or you can use it twice to say to the other team, we're kicking off to you. The only thing that this removes from the game would be a surprise onside kick.
Which is why I do like, maybe we would make it three total.
No,
for
no,
the
no.
Team.
No, no. How about this? That's just the casualty in this whole thing.
The
surprise onside kick.
So if you choose to receive, the other team could onside kick it.
That is correct. If you say I want to receive, and also you have the opening kickoff for the game and a Sean Payton move at the opening of the second half.
The kickoff still happens to start the game, so you can get the flash bulbs popping at the beginning of games, and it starts at the second half and in overtime, okay? But kickoff's removed for the rest of the game. If the other team scores and you get the ball, you have the option of saying, I'm kicking off, or I'm making you kick off, or I get the ball on the 25-yard line. And that's great. I love it.
Okay, interesting idea. I have one question, though.
I might not be the right guy to ask, but
no, I think you'll have. I think you'll have something. Like, do you carry a flag? We have the red challenge flag. So, like, what's the kickoff flag? Or what's the item that you have to signify that this is, like, do you throw a tee out onto the field?
Maybe it's, like, a flag of your team's color, like we would have a purple flag.
Okay, I like that.
With a little Vikings logo.
Yep.
Or, like, the little horn. On the helmets.
That's a great idea. They should do that with a challenge flag.
We'll get our design department on it.
Yes, we will. Let's get Alicia and Taylor and the crew in on this project and have them design some flags. Let's put a design on the red challenge flag. For crying out loud.
Yeah, why
let's
not?
Get creative
Dress
on here.
Dress it up a little bit.
The league's
bit.
All about branding. I mean, let's brand these flags. But seriously, what do you think about this proposal?
It's an interesting proposal. It's very new. So I wouldn't see it just thrown into the league just like that. But they make some good points in their discussion.
Yeah. Another one I've heard is to replace the kickoff with punts. So you begin the game in a punt formation, okay?
Like from a line of scrimmage or from like
because
after a safety punt?
I think the danger part of the kickoff return is not the returner running against the guys trying to tackle him. It's the blockers who are blocking the oncoming coverage guys who have a 40-yard head start. Sprint on them.
Sure.
That's the danger. So if you have a punt formation, now guys are lined up right across the line of scrimmage from each other, and you don't have that 40-yard head start to get momentum going for a collision. So let's start the game with a punt, because now, first of all, there are twice as many punt return touchdowns as kickoff return touchdowns in a given season. Okay, that's a five-year average. Over the last 5 years, I looked it up. Twice as many punt return touchdowns as kickoff return touchdowns.
Stat machine today. Yeah,
I think it's 72 to 34, so it's even a little more than half. Also, you have the opportunity for a blocked punt. How about starting the game with a blocked punt? That would be cool.
We could do that.
And now to replace the onside kick, you can fake punt it. So if you gain 10 yards on a fake punt, you retain possession. How about that as an idea?
I'm on board.
I stole that from Pat Kerwin, who is a host on Sirius XM NFL Radio and a guy I listen to every day on my drive home. And speaking of Sirius XM NFL Radio, Nate, we chatted with Ross Tucker, who is host of The Morning Drive on Sirius XM.
How about that NFL for a Radio. Segue?
Yeah, that's like professionally done almost.
That was well done.
Blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. We talked to Ross Tucker about a bunch of stuff, and he's got his hands wrapped around all of it. He's a former NFL offensive lineman, so he knows his stuff there. We've been active along the offensive line in the offseason, and he hosts a radio show or two every single day and has a podcast every week about what's happening in the NFL. And obviously, coming off the owners' meetings, there's a lot to talk about there. So Ross Tucker, a perfect guest to have on this week's edition of the WAPcast. It's Ross Tucker, host of The Morning Kickoff on Sirius XM NFL Radio Channel 88. He's also the host of his own podcast called the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You can also catch Ross on Pro Football Talk, on the NBC Sports Network as a college football game analyst for NBC Sports and the YES Network. He does so many things, but today he's going to be a guest on the WABcast. Also, for those of you who still read to consume football content, Ross is the lead NFL columnist for the Sporting News. You can check out some of his work there as well. Hey, Ross, welcome into the WABcast. It's time to talk about some offensive linemen. As you know, it's a position that doesn't get enough love or attention in the league, especially relative to the impact they have on games. So we're going to change that right here and right now. And let's talk, at first, at least, a little bit of offensive line. And I think a good place to start is with what just happened at the NFL's owners' meetings with some of the rule changes and the elimination of the chop block. So what I want to know is your reaction to it and how you think it might change what people see when they watch games.
Well, the first thing everybody needs to know is what the difference is between a chop block and a cut block, because I see, I don't care about the fans, you know, whether or not they know about it, but I'm amazed how many players and members of the media don't know what the difference is. I mean, I see these DBs praising on Twitter that the chop block's been eliminated, that they're not going to get cut block anymore. They have no idea what they're talking about. It's hilarious. A chop block involves two people. One person's high, one person's low. A cut block is just a low block involving one person, and it's still perfectly legal. So Patrick Peterson, T.J. Ward, all the guys saying, all right, yes, you're in for a rude awakening. They're still going to take your legs out. The only reason that a chop block was still legal anyway, the only instance was on the backside of a running play in the direction where the run is going between two adjacent offensive linemen going in the same direction. And basically, it was the backside of zone blocking schemes. Outside zone blocking scheme, you know, being able to cut on the backside, even if that defensive lineman grabbed onto the guard or grabbed onto the center. They're trying to eliminate that. It still happens. I'll be curious to see how much of an impact it really has next year.
Okay, well, Ross, as a former player, you know, players have, you know, their universe of time for the league is their career. But now, as you've advanced in your post-playing career and you are you analyze the game, you know, that universe of time is a much longer period. You know, you want the game to be relevant for a long period of time. Do you feel that this move by the league to basically outlaw the chop block is something that will be good for the game, or is it something that you disagreed with?
Well, I think there are still some injuries on the backside of plays. I don't know how many, but there are still some. So maybe this helps eliminate that. But I don't know. You know, maybe teams don't run outside zone as much. Maybe they run more hard-hitting downhill runs and that leads to more physicality and more injuries. Sure. I don't know that it'll have as much of an impact as they think it will. And I'll be curious to see the level of impact it has on the running game itself. I mean, I know it'll be something. I know there will be some level of impact. I just don't know to what extent and to what level it will impact the run game.
Okay. I want to clarify one thing, too, because you've been using some terminology, and I just want to make sure everyone is on the same page. Can you go through maybe just the very brief differences between a zone-blocking scheme and a man-blocking scheme?
Yeah, so a man-blocking scheme, you usually have a pretty good – there can still be some double teams, but you usually have a very good idea of who you're blocking ahead of time, what man you're blocking. And a lot of times it's one-on-one or two-on-one guys, and then you're moving up to the next guy, right?
Yep.
Zone blocking, you're more or less blocking an area. And probably the biggest way to describe it would be man blocking, you're usually looking for more vertical displacement. You're trying to knock the guy back more usually in man blocking, and you're usually using more angles. Zone blocking, everybody on the offensive line should have the same footwork. They're working in concert with each other. And you're really trying to get more horizontal movement, horizontal displacement. And on the backside, you usually cut one defender down on the ground, and that's what creates the big seam. So basically, you get everybody moving in one direction really fast, really hard, because they all need to stay in their gap. And if you just get one guy cut down the backside, that's when the running back can put his foot in the ground and get right up in that hill. And it looks like he's just going right downhill. It looks like he's cutting straight downhill. But because everything in front of him is moving laterally so quickly, he's able to go downhill and cut it all the way back and usually have a lot of success, which is why, you know, the Broncos, the Texans, some of these historic zone-blocking teams have been so productive in the run game.
All right, got it. Great breakdown there. Ross, as host of the Morning Kickoff on SiriusXM NFL Radio, on your pod, you do a few podcasts, on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. In the aftermath of the owners' meetings, what are some other things that you have been talking about with callers or you've been talking about with guests on your shows? What are some of the headliner topics coming from the owners' meetings?
Well, you know, chop block is one. I think the other rules that they implemented in terms of the automatic ejection rule, I've got no problem with it. I think it's a good idea. You know, even if it's a small deterrent for the players, I think it's good for them to know that rule exists. I know there were some coaches, Mike, that were against it because they said, well, what if one of our guys gets an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty? Then the other team will try to bait or goat him into another one. To which I say, number one, don't get the first unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. It's not that hard to avoid an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. Number two, if you do get one, don't let them go or bring you into another one. I mean, I don't think that's a big deal. And then in terms of the touchback rule, I'll be very curious, Mike, to see how it manifests itself and whether or not it leads to more touchbacks or less. You know, you'd think more guys catching the ball in the end zone would take a knee because they get the ball at 25. That makes sense. But will special teams coordinators have their kickers kick it deep in the end zone, or will they try to get a little more air under the ball and have the ball come down and around the goal line and try to make the tackle inside the 20? That remains to be seen, which is why that's only a one-year rule at this point.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting about that, Ross, is a lot of times when we see these rules that are passed on a one-year trial basis, it's basically a foregone conclusion that the following year they're going to be ratified permanently. I mean, we just saw that with the PAT rule. That was a one-year trial last year, ratified permanently this year. But this is one where it could go the other way if the competition committee doesn't like the numbers.
You're 100% right, and it will be 100% entirely about the numbers. If the number of touchbacks goes up, it'll stay. If the number of touchbacks goes down, it'll go, which to me is an even broader issue, which is doesn't it feel like a half measure? I mean, they tell us all the time how dangerous the kickoffs are, and they're clearly trying to get less and less of them. You know, if it's that dangerous, why not eliminate it or change it somehow rather than just trying to get less?
Right. Yeah. It's interesting experimentation that they're doing, and I think they have to consider a lot of things, including public interest and what the public wants, but most importantly, player safety. I think there's a lot that goes into it, but it will be interesting to see how that one unfolds and what the numbers, you know, how the numbers play out. I want to ask you a couple things about the Vikings, Ross, before we go, and then the draft. We hired a new offensive line coach, Tony Sperano. Do you have any history with Tony? I mean, you played offensive line in the league for a few different teams. Did you ever run into Coach Sperano?
Absolutely. In fact, ironically, you know, he was a major reason why I even got an opportunity in the NFL. He had been the head coach at New Haven at Division II, and he and my agent, Joe Linta, were very close, and as a result, that helped me to get my opportunity with the Redskins in 2001 when Tony was the tight end coach and the assistant offensive line coach. So
wow.
That really helped. And then he actually was in Dallas as the tight end coach again when I was there in 03 under Bill Parcells. So we ran into each other a couple times. I think he's a heck of a coach, a very good person, and honestly, you know, I owe a lot of my life to him, so I'm probably a little biased in everything I say about him. But the one thing that is most important, Mike, is players know when guys are genuine or not. You know, players can spot a phony from a mile away, and as long as you are real, they'll like you. And you know what you're doing? They'll like you, and Tony Sperano is both of those things.
Great. So when I run into Coach Sperano in the hallway and told him I talked to you earlier today, he's not going to throw a shoe at me or anything.
No. He'll be like, ah, Tom, great guy. Yeah, Tom, it's great. How was he up to? He's awesome.
Okay, good. The Vikings signed a couple of new players for Tony to work with. Well, all the players are going to be new for him because it's his first year, so the existing guys will be new. But and actually, one guy won't be new to Tony because one of them is Alex Boone, who was in San Francisco with Tony last year. So the Vikings add Alex Boone at guard, and they add Andre Smith at tackle. What do you think that does to the Vikings' offensive line situation?
Well, I think they're in a really good spot now because I think that they've got enough bodies and enough depth that they're going to have really, really healthy competition across the board. And even if a guy goes down this year, like what happened last year, they should be in really good shape. You know, Andre and Lodeholt competing at right tackle. Boone will obviously start, but it just Clemmings has a chance to maybe move over to the left side and work there. I just think it gives them a lot more opportunities, a lot more guys to work with, and Tony will be able to come up with a combination that he likes best, find the right five, and maybe just as importantly as the right five, the right seven, because with where the Vikings are hoping to go, which is not just to the playoffs but making a run, they're going to have injuries. I'm just telling you right now, at some point, a couple offensive linemen are going to miss games, and the question will be what they're able to do at that point.
Right. I was listening to one of your podcasts with Fran Duffy, the college draft podcast that you did with Fran, and the last episode that I listened to anyway, you guys were talking about offensive linemen. And a couple of things you said that were interesting to me is two keys that you look for when evaluating offensive linemen is awareness for a lineman and a lineman's temperament. Can you expand on that a little bit and why you think those two things are important? Because none of them are height, weight, speed, strength, bench press reps, nothing like that. You didn't talk about those things. You talked about temperament and awareness.
Yeah, well, awareness, you could probably say for every position, but I think it's especially true for offensive linemen. Look, it is a very demanding position mentally, and so much of it is your football IQ and how well you process and pick things up, because defenses are constantly moving, they're constantly changing, and so much of that position is just knowing the right guy to block and how to block them. So those are things I can pick up watching guys on tape to see just how generally aware of what the defense is trying to do and how they're able to counteract it. And then physical temperament, I'm a big believer that that stuff makes an impact over the course of a game. You know, finishing blocks, trying to help out your buddy, those type of things are huge. And I that's how I played. That's what I believe in. And I just think you can wear down the opposition mentally and physically, and that it has an impact late in games if you're able to do so. So those are the two things I look for. Because that also tells me their physical and mental toughness, which is a huge, huge ingredient of that position.
Okay, interesting. I think that's something the Vikings saw in Alex Boone, one reason why they wanted to add him, and Coach Zimmer talked about that at the owners' meetings. When it comes to draft prospects, Ross, your top five were Tunsil, Stanley, Conklin, Ryan Kelly, and Cody Whitehair. Whether it's one of those five, or maybe it's a different lineman, or you can even maybe profile a type of lineman, where do you think offensive line fits for the Vikings in this draft, given the fact that they've signed two guys who may start in free agency? Where do you think the Vikings could look in this draft to find some help up front?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they took a lineman high now. I mean, that would surprise me, because I think that they have other positions of need that they want to fill. You know, if they're really down on Khalil and don't think they're going to bring him back after this year, and they really don't know that Clemmings can be that guy and one of the top left tackles fell to them, maybe they would consider it. I don't see it. I also don't think that they would draft a guy like Ryan Kelly that high, the center out of Alabama, because I think they want to see what Sullivan can do coming back from injury. I don't expect them to draft a lineman in the first couple rounds now that they hit it so hard in free agency with Boone and Andre Smith. I think they're much more likely to go wide receiver or somewhere on defense.
Okay, cool. Remember, folks, you're listening to Ross Tucker. You can catch him on Twitter, at Ross Tucker NFL. It's been a treat to have you on, Ross. Before you go, though, we're going to put you on the spot. The 2016 season, when you think about the Vikings, give us a player that you're excited to watch to see what happens with that player on the Vikings roster heading into 2016.
I guess I'm going to say Kyle Rudolph. I really think that they're going to throw the ball more. I think he's going to be more productive. I think the offensive line will be better, which will let him get out in pass protecting on pass routes a little bit more. And I think Kyle Rudolph's going to take a big step in 2016.
Awesome. Good stuff, Ross. It's fun to listen to you on SiriusXM NFL Radio on your podcast. You're a good follow on Twitter. Again, at Ross Tucker NFL. You can catch Ross on Twitter there. You can also listen to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Get to know a little bit more about the game that Ross has played and now analyzes so well. Ross, you joined the Wobcast for a second time today. We really appreciate having you on, and we hope you have a good day, and we'll talk to you again down the line soon, okay?
Yeah, my pleasure. I didn't even know it was called the Wobcast. That's awesome. I love it.
Well, I mean, I guess I don't know if it's original or not, but it's all we could come up with. I'm glad you like it. It gives me a little more confidence in the name.
Yep, I like it. Thanks, Mike.
All right, local product, Carson Wentz, quarterback from North Dakota State. He recently had his pro day, Nate. And so on that topic, now North Dakota State, I don't want to insult them by calling them a small school. They've won 5 straight national titles. I mean,
it's a decent run.
It's a good run, yeah. I say small school because they're not a Power 5 conference, so to speak. So not small like small time. That's big time stuff to win 5 straight titles. But, I mean, North Dakota State is not a quote-unquote powerhouse. So on the topic of Carson Wentz, North Dakota State, and non-Power 5 conference prospects, let's take a listen to an NFL Network clip where they go through some small school draft prospects to watch. Take a listen.
Guys, let's get some other small school players that the fans at home should be looking for. Curtis, who do you got?
I'm going with Ryan Smith out of North Carolina Central. You know, watching him at the combine, you hear 4-4, you hear 18 on the bench, and I hadn't heard anything about this young man. The first thing you do is go to the tape. And what I like when I saw is a corner that, number one, he goes on the right, he goes on the left, he will follow a number one receiver, and his feet are off the chain. Watching him in press coverage, he can definitely press, but his off coverage, being able to break up on the ball with his quick feet, and he's aggressive too. He will run through a receiver to bat down the ball. Ryan Smith is my guy.
With the 7 career interceptions for Ryan Smith. DJ?
I'm going to go Matt Judon here from Grand Valley. And this is a school I made a school call my very first year in scouting, so it's near and dear to my heart here. Mm-hmm. But this is somebody you watch him on tape. You want to see production. You want to see somebody dominate. They couldn't block him at this level.
He had 20 sacks last year.
20 sacks is good. That's good. I'm a fan of that. He also did a nice job at the combine. Ran a 4.73 in vertical, 35 inches. So it shows you just how explosive he is. He's somebody teams are excited about. But I got to tell you guys, you know, I try not to look down on these Division I AA and Division II players. App State's Division I now, you know, so I feel like I'm kind of in that different frame. I used to be one of them,
but
now
I'm at
Division I.
And now it's a little bit different, right? Just a little bit different category.
I don't
want to
be sticking my nose up. We're Division I school now.
You're trying to stay with the people, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I see that.
You're a man of the people.
There you go.
As are you, Charles Davis.
All right, great. How about Harlan Miller, guys, the corner from southeastern Louisiana? We got a chance to see him at the Senior Bowl. We got a chance to see him at the Combine. Speed, a little bit lacking when you're talking about running a 4.65 at the combine, but you plug in his tape and he plays fast and he plays aggressively. I watched him against Ohio University, probably the biggest game on their schedule last year. First two plays of the game, he made tackles. Broke up two or three passes before I even clicked off the film. Was always around the football if it even happened to come near his area. 11 career interceptions. And you know what else he does? He returns punts. So it gives you a little bit extra value.
All right. You got one in Harlan Miller.
Yeah.
We're going to give you two, Charles.
You're going to give me a bonus?
We're going to give you a bonus round.
Let's all right. Appreciate it. Yesterday, I got on the phone and called the offensive coordinator at East Stroudsburg State, a guy by the name of Mike Terwilliger. And he's co-signing on Matt Stoltz, his quarterback, a Division II guy, East Stroudsburg State, the PSAC, Pennsylvania State Athletic Conference. And this guy broke records that his father held playing quarterback for Mike Terwilliger, who's been there 39 years as the offensive coordinator and coach. And he's coached both of these guys. Loves him. I don't know that he'll get drafted, guys, but he's a guy that's probably going to get into a camp and have a chance to show his wares and ran a whole lot of offense while he was at East Stroudsburg State.
Now, small school prospects, Nate, they're important to the Vikings. I mean, you have Charles Johnson, Grand Valley State, which Matt Judon was mentioned in that piece. And then I think one of everyone's favorite Vikings is Adam Thielen, and he is from a small school, Minnesota State Mankato, where we have training camps. So small school prospects, you might not know their name, but maybe you should get to know their names because some of them are going to make a big impact on NFL rosters in the next year. Okay, let's stick with the draft theme. Ideal scenarios for the Vikings' first two picks. NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah went through the ideal scenario for the Vikings on his Move the Sticks podcast with Bucky Brooks. Take a listen to what Mr. Jeremiah says.
Now, Minnesota Vikings picks 23 and 54. We're going to go offensive heavy here, and we're going to go get somebody that can pair up at wide receiver with our first pick. Going to go Corey Coleman at pick number 23, speedy wide receiver out at Baylor, and we're going to pair him up with Stephon Diggs, and we're going to be able to stretch the field. Playing indoors now, right, in Minnesota?
Yeah. Inside.
So Teddy's going to cut it.
Teddy two gloves. He can cut it loose.
Cut it loose, baby. We're going to go down the field with Corey Coleman. We say it each and every time Corey Coleman's name comes up. How many routes, Buck?
He only runs four.
Four? Hitch slant, post, go.
Oh, that's it. Easy.
But
easy.
He does all of his damage. He does his damage, and we're both big Corey Coleman fans. I feel he's the best wide receiver in this draft class and be a nice pick for him there at 23. Then they come back at 54, stay on the offensive side of the ball. Let's continue to help Teddy Bridgewater. Let's go Christian Westerman, the guard from Arizona State.
Physical up front.
Big physical guy, can create some movement at the point of attack and can kind of help get that running game, continue that to be at a high level there with Adrian Peterson and company. I think this way they go offense. That defense has got so many young studs. Let's add some more pieces to build around our quarterback, and we do that with Corey Coleman at 23 and Christian Westerman at 54.
And then speaking of the quarterback, this is the year where he should kind of take that next step. Year three, he's kind of played the role of the game manager those first 2 years with Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson just had a birthday. He turns 31. I think at some point, if you're the Vikings, you're looking to kind of change your offensive philosophy, make it a little more quarterback-centric. Moving inside should help Teddy Bridgewater push the ball down the field. I know Mike Wallace complained about the quarterback play there, but I think he'll be fine. I didn't think the deep ball was an issue when we watched him at Louisville.
Yeah.
I think now you put him inside the cozy confines of a dome, he should get back to being Teddy.
Those games outdoors in Minnesota just look frigid.
It's frigid, but, you know, the beauty of what it did, it helped Minnesota build a team that I think is a team that's equipped to play in the postseason because they have a strong defense, they have a running game, they have a very effective quarterback. Now you move them inside, they have the ability to be a little more maybe offensive-centric when it comes to pushing the ball down the field. I think it helps them. I think they're well-positioned to be a team that's going to contend for the next few years.
I love how much Bucky Brooks loves Teddy Bridgewater. Every time we talk to him or hear from him, he's talking up Teddy. Love it.
Hopefully he's right. I mean, he's got a lot of confidence in Teddy this season, so hopefully that means good things for number five.
If Bucky is right, that the Vikings are right, that Teddy Bridgewater is right, we're going to be in good moods for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So to help Teddy Bridgewater, basically any mock drafts that that you read or listen to, depending on how you like to consume your mock drafts, I mean, it's in some form or fashion helping Teddy Bridgewater. It's an offensive lineman of some kind, or it's a wide receiver of some kind.
That's much. Basically it. Yeah.
Pretty much. And in this ideal scenario, Daniel Jeremiah falls in line with that. But it's two names that you haven't seen much, because if it's offensive lineman, you've seen a lot of Taylor Decker, the tackle from Ohio State. You've seen a lot of Cody Whitehair, the guard who could play tackle but could also play guard from Kansas State. And then at receiver, you see a lot of Josh Doctson from TCU. You see a lot of Laquon Treadwell from Ole Miss. Or you see a lot of Michael Thomas from Ohio State. But here, Jeremiah has Corey Coleman, who you haven't seen a lot of from Baylor. And you have Christian Westerman, an offensive guard from Arizona State. So the positions remain the same here for Daniel Jeremiah in his ideal scenario, but the names are mixed up a little bit. Speaking of mock drafts, Mock Madness 4.0 is on Vikings.com right now, and it is very wide receiver heavy, Nate. I took a stroll through it, and everyone except a couple of those mock drafts, including both the ESPN guys, Kuiper and McShay, they have wide receiver for the Vikings. Earlier today, we watched Laquon Treadwell's pro day at Ole Miss. He obviously is a wide receiver. A lot of people are linking to the Vikings. So every year, it seems like wide receiver is mocked to the Vikings for some reason. It has something to do with Randy Moss, I think.
You think so?
Yes.
I mean, everybody wants the next Randy Moss in Minnesota?
Yes.
We'd take that too.
I would love that, yeah. I mean, the way he came on in 98, I mean, I think it's the best rookie season a receiver has probably ever had. I'm just going to go ahead and say it without knowing every single rookie receiver's season in my mind. I'm going to just guess that was probably the best one ever.
It's getting close to almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't that scary to think about?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're going to keep seeing this. Unless the Vikings trade for or somehow acquire a stud wide receiver between now and April 28th, which is the first day of the draft, you're going to continue to see wide receivers mocked to the Vikings, whether it's Corey Coleman, Josh Doctson, Laquon Treadwell, Michael Thomas, Will Fuller, whoever it might be, you're going to continue to see that. But that doesn't mean it's going to happen at pick number 23. It could happen at pick number 54 in the second round, and you could take a different player at a different position at pick number 23. I don't think you can rule that out for the Vikings at this stage. I think offensive line is certainly in play. Yes, the Vikings have added two offensive linemen in free agency, Andre Smith at right tackle and Alex Boone at left tackle. But think of it this way. Matt Khalil is on the last year of his deal. You don't know what the long-term situation is at center with John Sullivan and Joe Berger. Right guard, you have Mike Harris on a one-year deal. You have Brandon Fusco, who's a little bit in flux, going from the right side to the left and now maybe back to the right. You have a rookie at right tackle in TJ Clemmings, but you have a veteran in Phil Loadholt, and you have Andre Smith on a one-year deal. So, I mean, that's not exactly a position that you have tucked away for the long term. So I think offensive line is a possibility for the Vikings at 23. And then how could you get mad at Rick Spielman for wanting to give Mike Zimmer and George Edwards another stud on defense? And this draft is chock full of studs on defense. And so you couldn't blame the Vikings for doing that at 23. So this is not me towing the company line. This is me looking at the draft and looking at the Vikings roster and how it's composed and saying they're an open book, I think, at 23. There might be one or two positions you can completely eliminate. But after that, I think everything is wide open. And I don't think they're going to draft a running back, but every year somebody falls out of the top of the draft that you can't believe. Like in 2013, it was Sharif Floyd. No one could believe that. In 2005, it was Aaron Rodgers. No one could believe that. So every year it happens. Someone falls. What if Ezekiel Elliott is that guy this year? What if he's there at 23? So I'm just not going to rule anybody out. I think you can probably rule quarterback out. And you're probably not going to take a kicker, punter, or fullback. But I remember in 2011, no one had tight end listed as a need for the Vikings. But in the second round, The Vikings were picking like 11th or 12th or 13th in the second round, and Kyle Rudolph was there. And Spielman said afterwards he was the top-rated player on our board, and it wasn't close. He was the top-rated tight end on our board, and it wasn't close. And there he is at like pick whatever, 48 or something, and so we took him. And so Rick is not afraid to do that. He will take the best player available. So I know everyone's going to continue to mock wide receiver to the Vikings, and that could end up happening, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. We mentioned Aaron Rodgers as one of the prospects who fell in the draft. It seems to happen every year to at least one guy. It happened to Aaron Rodgers in 2005. And speaking of 2005, that's when Mr. Rodgers says he saw a UFO. What do you got for us on this, Nate?
Yeah, so one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL just saw a UFO and he's telling people about it.
This is a big deal, I think.
I wonder if Teddy's seen a UFO. We should probably ask him now that this story's out there.
Right. I know that this did get a little bit of traction on the internet, but I think it should have. I mean, it's Aaron Rodgers saying he saw a UFO, but doing it, as you've said, not in like, this guy's a lunatic type
right.
fashion.
Like actual... you're listening to him talk about it, and we'll play a clip here in a second, but you listen to him talk about it, and you're like, yes, I mean, it doesn't sound crazy.
Like, not like your grandpa's World War II stories that have been embellished over the last 75 years. Like,
right.
actually, this may have happened type of
right.
storytelling by Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah, so this is from the Nerdist.com podcast, You Made It Weird, and the host is Pete Holmes, and it's like a two-hour podcast, a two-hour discussion they have. This is only just a small, small piece of it. They cover all kinds of topics, but
okay.
but this is... them talking about the UFO that Aaron Rodgers claims to have seen in 2005.
Let's hear it.
That was a good throw. Anyway, so you saw a UFO. Talk about that. That's my kind of thing.
I saw an unidentified flying object
yeah.
in the sky in New Jersey in 2005.
Get out and stay, but whoa.
Leave?
No, don't leave.
Okay.
You know, I have friends that have seen things. Three friends of mine were on a porch in New York. So, you know, similar but
close,
different.
Yeah.
Close. Were you in rural or Ciudad?
Rural.
Rural.
Mm-hmm.
Alone?
Late at night. I was with a good friend of mine. Multiple eyewitnesses saw the same thing. Actually,
no.
I checked in with him a couple years ago. I said, remember that one night? And before I even finished, he's like, yeah, I think about that almost every day.
Get your fire in the sky?
Yeah.
Okay, so just give me the backstory. What were you doing? What time was it?
Well, I had declared for the draft, so I was out there doing a show called Cold Pizza for ESPN,
uh-huh.
which turned into First Take. And I had it early in the morning in New York City, and one of my best friends from college, a teammate, his family was from Jersey, so I went over I was going to spend the night with him. He's going to drive in. Drive me in the morning. So I went to his folks' house and had this great Italian dinner. They're a big Italian family. And so it's, you know, it's eight courses and he started at 8 and it ends at midnight. And so we're, you know, we're winding down there and there was a weird siren in the distance. And
wait, you heard it as well?
Well, let me get to it. All right. Let me get some roundabout way of getting to the story. The backstory is important for
okay.
any ufologists out there. Who,
ufologists.
Yeah. Is that what
you heard?
That
a siren. Said? No, yeah, I'm just going.
I heard
you.
A siren.
Yeah.
Right. In the distance. So we go outside. It was a snowy night. It was in, I think it was in February. And we went outside and it was one of those kind of bright nights where it's overcast, but there's enough light from the moon kind of reflecting off the clouds, I'm guessing, where
yeah.
you can, you know, you can see things. And the next thing you know, we saw something in the sky. And
how big?
The only way to kind of make it so people can get a visual of kind of what it looked like was, if you've seen the movie Independence Day, which is a great
yeah,
movie,
sure.
and they're coming out with another one.
Are they?
Yeah.
But it looked like Independence Day.
Yeah, when the plane it looks like a commercial jet's kind of flying, or maybe it's a military jet, and they're kind of trying to figure out what's coming through the clouds, and you see like just kind of a fiery movement of cloud, I guess.
Mm.
Coming through the sky, and then the plane eventually runs into the spaceship, which is coming in the orbit. It was like that in a sense of that it was a large orange left to right moving object.
Whoa.
And
it wasn't triangular. It was more like a messy shape.
You know, because of the overcast nature of the night and the snow, you couldn't make out. It was behind kind of the clouds we were seeing, but it was definitively large in the night sky, moving from left to right. Again, we're at like 12:30 at night here.
Yeah.
It was me and Steve and his brother that saw it. And it goes out of sight, and we look at each other and go, what in the f*** was that?
Holy f***.
And then, yeah.
So what did he say? It goes out of sight. Did it kind of vanish or?
It just, yeah, it just went out of sight. And you could hear it moving. And then when it had been out of sight for a good 30 seconds, I don't want to say 30 seconds, it felt like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But at the time, we were kind of like in shock. Then we hear the sound, definitive sound. Anybody who's been to a flyover or been to an air show or just seen Top Gun, you know the sound that a fighter jet makes as it flies by.
Yeah.
And there are about four of those.
Four fighter jets?
Now, if you know anything about UFO sightings, you've done research, you know that a lot of times two things are connected to UFO sightings. One is the presence of fighter jets.
Is that right? Because they're sent out to look at it?
To chase them down or to check out what's going on. And two is that there's a lot of sightings around nuclear power plants.
Oh.
So to tie it all together, the alarm we heard was from 30 miles out, there was a nuclear power plant that had an alarm that went off.
Well, Aaron, you were right to shush me. That's a good detail.
And actually the alarm went off an hour later.
No.
We were still in shock still, so we all ran downstairs and ran outside and were like, oh, is something else coming?
Oh,
and we didn't,
God.
You know, nothing else showed up. But again, in typical fashion, there was no mention of it the next day.
Yeah.
Now, it might have been after press time, so we said, all right, the day after. There's got to be something, right?
Yeah.
Nothing.
All right. So are you a believer now?
No. I'm not. Like, not because it's Aaron Rodgers and I'm not going to believe anything he says. I'm kind of like a I need to see it to believe it type of guy.
That's fair.
And
that's fair. He said it was just like Independence Day, so... Maybe you can just go back and watch that.
So was he saying that the UFO had sirens, or was he saying that sirens were playing somewhere on Earth at the same time he saw the UFO?
I think he heard the sirens of the UFO and then came outside to see what was going on and was like, oh, a UFO.
Right there. Why would a UFO have sirens?
You can ask the extraterrestrials that when they come here someday.
Yeah.
After explaining that you didn't believe in them.
I mean, if they do exist and they're out there and they listen to the Wobcast, I'm in big trouble. Right? They're coming after me. Okay.
But they know they're Vikings.
Right. All right. U.S. Bank Stadium, Nate, you have a couple of notes on here. A Vikings game will not be the first event that is held at U.S. Bank Stadium.
Well, you need a couple events to break it in, you know?
I guess. Yeah, and so if things go well at these events, then we'll have a football game there.
Right.
Right?
If things don't, then... We could be in a different situation.
Things
will go well. The stadium's coming along great. And they have announced a few big events taking place before we see a kickoff of a football game.
On Saturday, August 20th, you have Metallica coming in to kick things off.
I haven't heard of them. Are they big?
Also, you've never heard music then. Heard music. We grew up in the Metallica, you know, playing in the locker room and the weight room.
Yep.
And that's how, when we grew up is when Metallica was doing that. So it's kind of cool that they'll be having one of the first events in the stadium. I'd like to have my fantasy football draft in the new stadium, by the way.
Are they doing that?
Well, I think the guys in my league, the tweener fantasy football league is what we call it. Because we're a bunch of old baseball players as well as football fans. And we always love the guys who... They didn't have their pants short with the old school stockings, but they didn't have their pants all the way down to their ankles. And so we called the tweener socks, the tweener pant look, the tweener fantasy football league. And our trophy is of a baseball player swinging a bat with tweeners on.
That's like halfway down your shin?
Yeah. Yeah. Tweeners.
Seems weird.
Yeah. So that's the name of our league. We've been doing it for like 15 years, and I want us to have our draft there. I don't think Lester Bagley and Jeff Anderson will allow that to happen.
I think just hand you the keys.
Yeah. So Metallica gets to be first ahead of the Tweener Fantasy Football League. That'll be pretty cool. And then also for those of you who like football, nice. It's AC Milan and Chelsea. They'll face each other in the International Champions Cup on August 3rd. Those two events will happen, and hopefully the Tweener Fantasy Football League draft will happen before the Vikings kick things off in terms of football games at US Bank Stadium. So exciting things happening at US Bank Stadium. They're at or above the 90% completion mark. So things are really rolling along there. I'm super pumped for them to install the field and the goalposts. I think that will be one of the coolest landmark events of the process. So
probably can't be too long from now.
No, I would think you got to be getting close to that. So that's what's happening at US Bank Stadium. That was a long show.
It was.
Did we get everything in?
Yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you. You're too.
Welcome. Thank you.
Let's come back next week. We'll do more draft stuff. We didn't do any fan mail here in this edition of the Wobcast. We promise we will do fan mail in next week's edition of the Wobcast. So until next week when we talk to you again, and on behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. Have a good rest of the week, everyone. This edition of the Wobcast is over. Thanks for listening. So, yeah, I started.